Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. If I sound a little bit stuffy, I do have a slight tickle in the throat. So if it gets a bit naughty during the course of the programme, I just have to take a few seconds, perhaps have a cough or a drop of water to clear my throat, but hopefully it will go along okay. Not such a packed programme as last week. We have the regular Sheldon Nidal report. I think they get better almost by the week. But some very interesting messages which come into my, what I call my spiritual section. And I've got some very interesting details of drawings in Stone Age caves of France and Spain, which, to my thinking, go back to the period immediately after the sinking of Atlantis, so there may well be a connection, but we will come to that later. But plenty of odds and ends to do with the general news, as usual. So, I'll start with Sheldon Nidal's excellent report on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. It reads, we return with another message about developments on Mother Earth. The covert struggle between the light and the dark continues script your global society. It is also in its final stages. These include manoeuvres on the part of the light that are destined to triumph over the last dark, the bell. These ones are still dedicated to staving off the inevitable. Their ominous stratagems may have succeeded so far, but what they fail to acknowledge is that each apparent victory towards their goals moves them instead closer to their undoing. They had intended to leave behind them a world infiltrated by small armed groups perpetually at each other's throats. One of our current tasks is to monitor this phenomenon and keep track of their whereabouts and their present and future plans. A few decades ago, the Anunnaki and their earthly minions started to focus these fledgling cells toward an open-ended campaign of broader-based terrorist attacks around the planet to justify their master plan for global domination. This orchestrated sectarian violence and terrorist activity was well underway by the late 1970s. It is these groups that were employed by the present US regime to create the climate of terror that now mesmerizes your world. Using this fog of chaos to its advantage, this administration forged a vital stranglehold on the movement of funds around the world. This policy was bolstered by the willing cooperation of a number of global financial institutions. Taken together, these strategies somewhat delayed the more optimistic timetables of our Earth allies. In recent months, however, clever countering tactics have moved our allies close to a tipping point in their plan, and we now anticipate a triumphant resolution to this drawn-out covert confrontation. Recently, beefed-up checkmate manoeuvres are now being brought to bear by those financial bodies backing the reforms of our Earth allies. Once these pincer movements have removed the US regime, a series of public announcements will take place. These revelations herald the Earth's allies' plans for global transformation, starting with the termination of the principal international conflicts. This will bring a level of peace to your globe that prepares the way for the mass introduction of your spiritual and space families. The current deadlock in the behind-the-scenes face-off is on the verge of crumbling, and history will view it as a mere bump on the path to your freedom and global prosperity. Never lose sight of the fact that heaven is deeply committed to your victory, and that forces are afoot in this world that guarantee a complete transformation of this present dark reality. Your world is under a divine decree, and a great field of light enfolds this globe. Nothing can resist this light in the end, and the Dark Ones realize their sinister goals are quite doomed. What keeps them going is the tunnel vision of the denial enact arrogance by brushing aside all facts that failed to support their delusions. They were able, for a decade, to avert the incoming reality. Now mounting public censure of their policies forces them to believe their goals are no longer attainable. Indeed, the closing moves of this global chess game are marked by the dark's unmistakably diminishing wriggle room. The effectiveness of the Light Forces' campaign to unseat the dark from power is now clearly visible, and a number of groups and individuals are in position and fully ready to deliver the finishing blows. This incorporates a carefully drawn-up legal procedure for uprooting the dark's tentacles from all of its present power structures, thus ensuring that their 13-millennia-long reign is indeed over for good. Then the Earth Allies' programs of putting right deep global distress can go into full swing. At the top of the list are the restoration of the American government to its constitutional roots, the global distribution of an untold wealth confiscated by the dark, and the wiping out of personal and national debt worldwide. These are merely openers. Deep-rooted conflicts need to be equitably resolved and an international commitment forged that is dedicated to a state of permanent global harmony. The fall of the Berlin Wall will seem like small potatoes, indeed, compared to what is coming. Nevertheless, configuring this new global reality requires a humongous amount of detailed planning and labour, well beyond the ability of the average person to imagine. In some respects, the preparations resemble the way a field general and his staff plan a campaign. Every possible variable must be considered and many backup scenarios developed. The diligence demanded of such an undertaking requires nothing less than a grand passion. This, coupled with an unflagging tenacity, was compulsory for each step of the way. These last few months especially have taught our Earth allies much about this and delivered up the wisdom needed to see them triumph. We are proud of what they have done, and we know this well-earned victory is very close. Continually confident and supportive of what is now happening. The forces of light are also close to supplying your prosperity and setting in motion the next series of events. The next series of events is predicted on the formal ouster of the American regime. Over the last 6 years, this unlawful government pulled off a series of quite monstrous deeds and stratagems aimed at supplying incredible wealth and power to the chosen few. As is becoming apparent, these plots did not come off as planned, and now your world faces a range of possible catastrophes on many fronts. Happily, the means to quickly remedy some of these perils is at hand. A number of diplomatic initiatives, currently well underway, are to bear fruit once this rogue US regime is dispatched. On the domestic front, the degeneration of the past 6 years, resulting from this administration's policies, can be quickly turned around by returning the country to constitutional and common law, by debt annulment, and by the distribution of the prosperity programs. One way out of the current US government shambles is the temporary suspension of the adulterated political apparatus. After an 8 or 9 month interregnum, the return to a fairer political system would begin to transform the fiscal campaign abuses. This would allow for a broader based multi-party system, which, combined with a decentralized mass media, permits frank and open debate of all issues, including those thrown up by the changes. The intention here is to give a means for all to have their views presented and voted upon in an actively democratic forum. Then, a re-empowered legislature can carry out what an informed public decided. The present fiscal shackles and unlawful legal ideas are to be torn away. In their stead, a series of steps intended to invite widespread participatory democracy can be put before the American people. The idea of an abundant and sovereign world democracy is a vital step towards setting up your new galactic society. This next period in your history is about reversing the coming ecological and societal calamities and forging an interim introductory blueprint for a Mother Earth-based galactic society. In the end, your society will be known by its honouring of its unique cultural diversity. During the past 13 millennia, the Dark used means of dire want, hatred, and a chain of fears to sway your history in line with their vision of a despotic one-world order. But the divine plan decreed otherwise. This branch of humanity is to come together to show how love, sovereignty, and divine abundance can heal the wounds of the vilest past. Even your present ingrained xenophobia will blossom into rejoicing at the prospect of reunion with your spiritual and space families. And it concludes, today we focus our attention on the events bringing you your abundance. Universal prosperity is an essential ingredient in allowing you to re-experience your God-given rights and sovereignty. All this is now very close to materializing in your lives. And so ends Sheldon Idle's message for this week. Just looking back at some of the statements he made there, and it's interesting, I think, to note that after the initial changes, including the redistribution of the untold wealth confiscated by the Dark, that there will be an immediate moving on to clear up the deep-rooted conflicts which are occurring, of course, on an international basis. And that, of course, will eventually bring about a state of permanent global harmony. I think, again, that's very encouraging. I really think Sheldon's messages need to be re-read maybe a few times to really take in the full content. Right, I shall be moving on to my general news now, but before I do that, give me a second or two just to have a couple of gulps of water. Right, here I am, I'm back with you again. That was nice, nice cool water. The hot potato, I suppose one could call it, at the moment in the general news, must be the ongoing saga regarding the Ambassador Leo Wanta theft scandal, and updates are coming every few days. And the latest one, which came out last Saturday, briefly tells us that the British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has been caught up in the Wanta theft scandal, and that 21 other officials, bankers, face ICJ arrest warrants, 12 are senior US public officials, including Chertoff, and Robert Gates mentions preparing for war with Russia and China. Now, these news items are by Christopher Story, who's the editor and publisher of the International Currency Review, World Reports Limited, which has offices in London and New York. Now, I'll read this bit out of the message that came through, and it's under the heading of German authorities reissue international arrest warrants. And they say that the State Office of Madame Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, has authorised the reissuance of warrants issued last December by the ad hoc tribunal of three European justices in Germany, in accordance with the subpoena of the International Court of Justice for named financial operatives holding high office in Britain, the United States and Germany itself, as well as named central and commercial bankers to be arrested. 12 senior US public officials are included on the list of 22 people for whom such warrants are being dispatched. Now, it goes on to say that last December, the US Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson Jr. was arrested on such a warrant after he had been specifically warned not to divert funds illegally, but proceeded to do just that, while on German soil. And he languished under police custody until exfiltrated by British operatives. Subsequently, he has been surveyed continually by British agents allegedly working for Tim Spicer's Sand Lion Line operation, which has a contract believed to be worth $350 million with the Pentagon. which cannot trust American agents to carry out its instructions. Now, moving on through Christopher Story's report, I now come to the following, which talks of the crux of the matter here for the moment, which is the $4.5 trillion that was not remitted by the deadline date, and so the immunity connected with doing that has lapsed. Now, it says that 12 of the 22 operatives facing ICG warrants are senior US public officials. Associates of the Mary Trust Group Inc. have informed the principals that these officials are unconcerned about the ICJ warrants, even though they are now strengthening the jurisdiction within the United States, because they believe that President Bush Jr. will pardon them at the end of his term. But unfortunately for the Prime Minister of Britain, Tony Blair, this consideration does not apply to him, or to Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, both of whom are now vulnerable to arrest for conspiracy to commit financial crimes in the Wanta settlement context. This means that the crisis has split the West, and that three Western great powers are now at each other's throats, while Robert Gates is warning Congress to prepare for war with Russia and China. How awful, isn't it, that thought? Yeah, it just goes on and on. Thank goodness there will come a point where they will be unable to keep going on and on like that with their warmongering. Now, the interesting point about that, to my mind, is that the 22 operatives who are involved here have actually signed their positions away. And it gets worse, apparently, because I find another bulletin which came through yesterday. See if I can see the source here. It's come from the rumormillnews.com. And it reads that a disgusted Republican blows the whistle. It says, the latest update on the Wanda affair has been published by Christopher Story only 4 days after the last update, which, of course, was the one I believe I just read an extract from. And it reads that this time it deals with a secretive document allegedly signed by all members of Bush's cabinet for their mutual self-protection from the fallout of the failure to repatriate the Wanta fund of $4.5 trillion. Wanta and Michael Cottrell were tipped off about this document by a disgusted Republican. Rather than a protection, Story sees the signing of the document as a self-indictment of the cabinet members. Unfortunately, the exact contents of the document are not spelled out in detail, and Christopher is hoping that a copy will eventually be obtained. He mentions that readers of the last update will recall that there was a lapse of temporary immunity for a number of high-level officials from warrants issued by the International Court of Justice, and that this put Dick Cheney, Tony Blair, Angela Merkel, and Michael Chertoff, among others, at the risk of arrest. And even more amazing was the story that three Supreme Justices had travelled to Europe to extend the court's jurisdiction to the US. Now, Christopher said, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I would assume it means these high-level officials could be arrested at any time. He says, in the light of this panic situation and the current story about the Bush cabinet document 6, let us hope the unnamed disgusted Republican has or can get a copy of this document and bring it forward. I have to think to myself that the way this Leo Wanta affair is developing, and in as much that the Bush administration has indicted itself, as Christopher Story has pointed out, that's providing there is power behind the legal challenge there. That could be the very means by which Bush and his administration will be removed. And I think that really comes top of the list for bringing about that action. And that will be wonderful. And although these legal affairs seem to move at a slow pace, I hope that our ET friends and their allies on the Earth are working towards making sure that this all comes to be. I'm just looking at it, yet another email that was floating around about the same thing. I can't on the face of it seem anything extra to what I've just read out, so I'll pass that one over. There's a little bit in an even earlier one that I thought might be interesting to read, again about the Leo Wanta affair, and it says that the US House of Representatives has a bill to abolish the Federal Reserve, which had been expected to be approved on the 1st of February. And it says, the House appears to have refrained from voting on this resolution, raising suspicions of collusion with the Cheney-directed Omega Ops conspirators to enable further fiat money to be generated from Wanta's funds, aiming the Fed's abolition, following which the Treasury will assume central banking functions. And it goes on to say, the House bill contains a schedule for phasing out the Federal Reserve, details of which, like the bill itself, have not yet been disclosed. And in sort of something by the way of a footnote, there is an update saying, we now understand that the bill was passed but was not signed, which strongly implies that the President of the United States may still be a co-conspirator with the Vice President. So there we are, it gets worse and worse, doesn't it, for the people involved in the Bush administration. And I'm glad that with all their power and their ability to bribe and whatever, it doesn't look as though they're going to win that one. It was some little while ago that the Katrina affair came about and destroyed much of New Orleans. And I read that on the 13th, that was Tuesday last, there was a tornado system which twisted up to 135 miles per hour, which ripped through the New Orleans neighborhoods on that morning, killing one person and injuring many others, and doing what they estimated to be was £20 million worth of damage. Now, several houses that were rebuilt, or almost rebuilt after Hurricane Katrina, were torn apart, and as were many schools which had to be closed. It says highways were shut down, piles of rubble were everywhere, trees were uprooted, and thousands of people left without electricity. Now, Governor Kathleen Bianco declared a state of emergency on Tuesday. And she approached the White House to ask them to do likewise. But as of Wednesday this week, George W. Bush has said that he will present the governor a timetable for when he will declare the New Orleans area in a state of emergency. And the writer of the article, whose name I don't have in this case, but it comes off the website, motherjones.com, says, if this sounds familiar, it should. The scenario lacks playful guitar strumming and a cake at a desert resort, but it is all too similar to what happened before. But there we are. It notes that Bush declared an emergency within 24 hours of a tornado that hit another area, yet he's not moving on this further problem in the New Orleans area. Interesting. I think us who are very sceptical of what goes on have suspected that there wasn't a lot of interest in really helping the people of New Orleans. It was sort of like token gestures. And I don't think the truth of what really took place has come out yet. Now, 9/11 never goes away, and it's unlikely to until I think there is a proper investigation. And yet this is another now, I think, in the coffin of Bush and his administration. There's always new evidence coming out, and this one comes from Paul Joseph Watson from the excellent website prisonplanet.com. Came out on last Saturday, February 10th. And he is saying that following their reports that week about three different Ground Zero rescue workers who all testified that they were told Building 7 was to be brought down, brought yet more revealing testimony to light. And this time, a former New York Police Department officer and first responder, who states that he clearly heard bombs tear down Building 7 as he ran away from its collapse. Now, Officer Craig Barmer awoke on 9/11 to images of the World Trade Center burning. 9 colleagues who worked inside the tower immediately headed for Ground Zero to help with the rescue effort. He is now suffering respiratory illnesses as a result of the toxic dust inhaled at the site. Barmer was in the immediate vicinity of Building 7 before it had collapsed at approximately 5:20 p.m. And the writer says it is worthwhile to watch the entire 27-minute video interview, which was conducted by Dylan Avery of Loose Change. But in the context of the article, Bartman's comments on the subject of Building 7 alone are transcribed after the jump. So you can evidently go to prisonplanet.com, and I imagine there's an article on there called Loose Change, where you can get a lot more information about that particular thing. An email that came through a few days ago, in actual fact, which has now surfaced, was talking about the legacy of radiation illness, which stirs objection to Nevada bomb tests. And it reads that when the baby boomers of St. George were children, radioactive ash from nuclear test explosions in Nevada regularly drifted towards the red bluffs of their town and fell like snow. They played in it and wrote their names in it on car windows. The federal government reassured the townspeople they were in no danger as it detonated 952 bombs in Nevada over 4 decades. But thousands of people who lived downwind at the test site got radiation-related cancer, and the town of 50,000 has its own cancer treatment centre today. There is a separate report, a short one, saying it is always heartwarming to see the true feelings the Pentagon has towards the people of this country. And if they so adamantly convinced that there will be no harm from divine strike, the Pentagon staff should send every one of their children to St. George for the day of the blast as a true assurance to its people that there will be no harm. And he's concluded by saying, of course, that will never happen. Now, a couple of comments regarding the soldiers who are coming back from the war and find they now have to fight a different battle. Can't just for the moment tell you where the source of this is. Often with the emails that I get, it isn't always linked up, but they're commenting on the fact that soldiers who were paralysed, suffered brain damage and lost limbs owe the government endless demand bonus money, and they must pay the money back because they didn't fulfil their tour of duty. Isn't that amazing? You would have thought they would have said, keep it, my friend, and compensate them with a lot more because of their condition and to help them recover. There was a similar comment saying that Bush would plan, would cut VA funding. And the Bush administration plans to cut funding for veterans' health care 2 years from now, even as badly wounded troops returning from Iraq could overwhelm the system. Again, there's a comment at the bottom saying it's astonishing how soon our vets become expendable for this administration. The two short articles really show what a terrible attitude there is. The people that often go abroad and feel that they're doing it as a duty and a sacrifice to their people back home. And it's really staggering the way they are treated. There's no doubt about it that people in the military are looked upon as expendable. I have a report here from another excellent site called Renders.com, and it's talking about the Very Chip Corporation, who they refer to as the much-hated purveyor of the Very Chip human ID implant, and they're saying it is airing its dirty laundry this week. Now, it says, this is not by choice, mind you, but because the Securities and Exchange Commission required the company to disclose its risk factors prior to launching its initial public offering of stock. That was going to be Friday, today. The company lays out nearly 20 pages of risk factors in its Form S-1 registration statement, a required document for the IPO. But what the company failed to reveal in its filing, maybe even more eye-opening, say Caspian privacy advocates Dr. Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre, the pair, authors of the Spy Chips series of books, have been vocal critics of Verichip dogging the company in recent years and facing down its senior executives on radio and national television. They say, and I quote, "Potential investors should be told how a hacker can simply walk by a chip person and clone his or her very chip signal. A threat demonstrated by security researcher Jonathan Westhues months ago," says McIntyre, who is a former Federal Bank examiner. Omitting the cloning threat from its SE documents is a serious oversight that could affect the value of Verichip stock. This is materially relevant information considering Verichip's claim that its product should be used to tighten security in facilities like nuclear power plants, she added. If you want more on Verichip's vulnerability to hacking, there's a link here, and it says, "See the RFID Hacking Underground Wired magazine." And you can get that if you go to the website, which is wired.com. So there we are. That's interesting. I must say, I really am horrified by the advancement of the idea of chipping everyone. And, as a neat little follow-on here, would you believe, if you haven't already heard it, about a week ago, there was a report by Brenda Wilson. She appears to be on a site called Spirit India State. And what she said was, Texas has become the first state to require girls to be vaccinated against the human papillomavirus. Legislators should okay shots against cancer. Indianapolis Star 10 reasons why HPV vaccine is a murky issue. Apparently some of that is on kpcnews.com or kaisernetwork.org. It's short and sweet, but it tells you that the idea of vaccinating, chipping people, forcing them to take drug treatment is a sign that Big Brother is intending to control everything you do. Now, I'm sometimes amazed, being in the UK here, how there seems to be a general policy, and we have to believe there is a world policy. And I find that in the UK, there's a similar thing that has happened. Now, this is credited to one of the big daily newspapers called the Daily Mail. So, of course, you can go to that on dailymail.co.uk. What the article says is that scientists have already developed a drug called naltrexone that eases heroin withdrawal symptoms. They've also got a cocaine vaccine called TACD, which has now been developed, so the document said. And it says, ministers could also crack down on drug dens by having the post scanned for supplies using modern technology, while police helicopters would use revolutionary laser radar systems to test the air for chemicals used to make drugs. Now, the document, reportedly being considered by Tony Blair's working group on crime, talks of immunotherapies developed in secret to protect a generation. And it says, a young person could be immunized and the drugs would never reach or affect the brain. Drug-related crimes could be reduced if vaccines can be successfully developed to reduce the craving. Apparently, health ministers and the General Medical Council have already objected. I find that staggering, of course, because these would be very unpopular and undecided moves by the people. You notice how they're very carefully kept under wraps, kept secret for as long as possible, since they don't want the people to get organised and put a spoke in their wheel. change, a couple of more positive things to end up the general news. Apparently in Tehran, a couple of weeks ago, they unveiled a herbal remedy against AIDS, and Health Minister Kamran Bakarani has announced that their scientists have produced a herbal medicine that boosts the human's body immunity system against the HIV/AIDS virus. And it agrees that the herbal-based medication called IMOD serves to control the AIDS virus and increases the body's immunity. It was also quoted as saying by the official news agency, IRNA, it is not a medication to kill virus. It rather can be used besides other antiretroviral drugs. They made that statement on their state radio. It says the drug made after 5 years of research has been tested on 200 patients, adding that it is considered the fifth generation of medication helping control the HIV/AIDS virus. This is a substance good for both AIDS patients and those who carry the virus without showing the symptoms. The director of the project, Fahadi, said the medication will now be tested on some 3,000 to 5,000 Iranian patients in the next year to monitor its efficacy. And the health minister said that the number of HIV/AIDS cases in Iran stands at around 14,000, while 1,700 people have died of the disease. Last June, Iranian officials warned about the rapid spread of HIV/AIDS infections in the country due to a surge in intravenous drug usage. Now, that's a positive step. I don't think the drug companies will find that very popular because they seem to go against any form of natural medicine. But I don't think they can totally stop it, thank goodness. Another positive move here comes from an article by Philip Walter from the Virginia Pilot. And he was talking about where in Norfolk, a team of scientists from the Old Dominion University and Eastern Virginia Medical School has reported killing melanoma in mice using lightning-fast, high-power jolts of electricity. Apparently, the electric bursts often disrupted the blood flow to the tumour cells and shrank their nuclei by 50%. Ucitelli, who works on this project, who is an associate professor of the electrical and computer engineering at the Old Dominion, said that the scientists found that they could kill the tumours with hundreds of electrical pulses in two treatments, given 2 to 3 weeks apart. And each burst of electricity carried 4,000 volts and lasted less than 1 millionth of a second. Again, that's a wonderful development. I wonder how far it will get. Doesn't sound as though it's in any way painful treatment. And I would think anything that helps to avoid the need for people to have chemotherapy must be welcomed, I think, with open arms. Finally, one that talks about the whole system, which is going under, undergoing rather, global warming. A few notes here looking at the solar system, and it reads that the Martian ice is shrinking dramatically, and new gullies that did not appear to exist in mid-2002 have appeared on the Martian sand dune. There's a prediction of global climate change on Jupiter by Philip S. Marcus. There is another report from Birmingham, Alabama, saying that Pluto is undergoing global warming. Researchers found that out incidentally on October the 9th, 2002. And finally, another report said that Pluto is thought to be warming up, and astronomers at the University of Tasmania have found that the solar system's smallest planet is not getting colder as first thought, and it probably does not have rings. There we are. Indication that global warming isn't a phenomenon just peculiar to the Earth. Indeed, I've heard it attributed to changes in the sun, and you can take that even further and say that the changes are emanating from the sun at the centre of the system. That is the galactic system, so who knows? Man certainly doesn't help with his own pollution and other things. Right, going to one of my old flying saucer reviews here. This came out November, December 69. It was a very good article in there talking about the drawings in the Stone Age caves of France and Spain. Obviously, you can't see the drawings I've got here, but I think my comments will help you to understand what I'm looking at and how intriguing and astonishing it is. Now, there are about 9 caves involved here. I mean, there are more overall, but these are the ones that are mentioned in this particular article. 3 are in Spain, and the rest are in France. And they've been carbon dated to approximately 8,500 BC to 11,500 BC. And I think that is a clear indication, in my understanding, when the last breakup of Atlantis occurred, to place the movement of the people into those areas to escape the destruction of Atlantis. And it would then also explain why you have these wonderful drawings. A lot of them were very artistic, very intelligently drawn, of animals that were not in fact peculiar to those regions, and were clearly very intelligent people. Now, what we have in the drawings in the Flying Saucer Review are those ones that by and large look like drawings of flying saucers, and amongst them there are circular craft, some that you couldn't really interpret in any other way except the circular craft, some with little domes on the top, some that are half semicircular, and even some that appear to have ladders reaching down from them. And in fact, in one of the drawings, there is someone standing underneath the craft, and it shows legs of the craft there and the ladder on another side. In fact, it's not the only one to show a drawing of what I'm certain is a flying saucer with people near it. For me, intriguingly, there was also a symbol which seemed to be pointing towards a flying saucer drawing, and that symbol has appeared on the underside of a flying saucer that was seen in our time. So I feel it can't be a coincidence, because I don't recognise the sign as one that's peculiar to the Earth. I mean, why should it be if it was on the underside of a flying saucer? So I think that's very interesting. The caves apparently covered an area no larger than London. And if you ran a centre line through them, apparently all the caves are relatively close to him. So again, you have to think in your mind that these people were landed there at various points along this, shall we say, or just off this centre line, and that was a deliberate placement. I suppose it also meant that they could keep in touch with one another, which is why in the caves perhaps you had these similar drawings. Now, that's all I wanted to say about those. It's a shame you can't actually see them, because there's quite a few. I suppose short of visiting the caves, you can't do much about it. But often in books that search out these types of peculiarities, you get mentioned some of the caves. Altamira, which is in Spain, is one that I've recognised that's come up before. In fact, that's the one that seems to be very positive to my mind. But if this article was ever repeated again, there's a lot of information in there. I mean, I'm talking about the ones to do with what are evidently drawings of flying saucers. But there's a lot of information about the other drawings. And incidentally, I did read a report, it's not in this one, that the ceilings were depicting the sky and they showed stars. And on some of the ceilings, they actually had the moon, the sun, and they had flying saucers there. Now, I mean, if that doesn't tell you that that is exactly what they are, doesn't know what will. So that's all on the flying saucer front. I read, saw a little video on YouTube that there has been another UFO sighting over Phoenix. Again, a small number of lights which seem to be travelling together. And again, the authorities tried to pass it off as flares or some sort of lights. I think that one's worn a bit thin by now. Now, in my special messages, I've got an excellent one here. One that I kept back from October 2005. What I like about it is that it relates to today so well. And in fact, if I've got the time, I'll read a follow-up message, although it's quite long, which came out just this month. Not from the same source. Anyway, I'll get on with this one. This came through Lisa. She sent it out by email, and it's called Strange Rumblings at the Centre of Our Galaxy, and it's by Hector Carrion. Now, it appears to be a little bit of Spanish underneath, which I'm guessing means the voice of Atlantis. It reads that radio bursts from the Galactic Centre, Los Angeles, Alta California, on October 18, 2005, and on March 2005, physics professor and astronomer Scott Hyman of Sweetbriar College made a startling announcement. Dr. Hyman and his colleagues wrote in the science journal Nature that they had detected something very extraordinary at the centre of our Milky Way galaxy. And while analysing low-frequency radio wave images taken by a very large array of telescopes at Socorro, New Mexico, in 2002, Dr. Hyman and his fellow researchers detected an intermittent signal that seemed intelligently directed. Now, the signal consisted of five highly energetic radio emissions of equal brightness that lasted 10 minutes each and appeared every 77 minutes over a 7-hour period from September the 30th to October the 1st. This discovery has left Professor Scott Hyman and the entire astronomy community scratching their heads. What are these strange rumblings at the centre of our galaxy? Modern-day astrophysicists and astronomers with their sophisticated scientific instruments are not the only humans that have contemplated this very same question. It goes on to say that Dr. Scott Hyman records energetic radio emissions from the galactic centre, which the Mayans called Unadkun. And to them, Unadku was the supreme god and ultimate creator. It represented the gateway to other galaxies beyond our sun, as well as all of the consciousness that has ever existed in this galaxy. Unadku, according to the Mayans, is also the consciousness which organized all matter from a whirling disk in the stars, planets, and solar systems. Unadku is the mother womb, which is constantly giving birth to new stars, and it gave birth to our own sun and planet Earth. They also believe that the Creator directs everything that happens in our galaxy from its centre through the emanation of periodic consciousness energy bursts. And today, modern astronomers have verified that the centre of our galaxy is a whirling disk with a black hole at its centre that is both swallowing and giving birth to stars. Interesting, isn't it? It goes on to talk about how the ancient Mayan astronomers accurately predicted over 1,500 years ago the exact alignment of the Earth, the Sun, the star cluster Pleiades, and of the centre of our galaxy that will take place at the end of the present long cycle of the Gregorian year 2012. Now, on the Mayan long calendar, the day designated falls on December the 21st, 2012, and this day will mark El Fin de los Tiempos, or the end of the long cycle at which time humanity will experience a new beginning. On this day, according to the Mayans, and subsequent Mesoamerican civilizations, the return of Kukulkan, also known as Quetzalcoatl, will take place. Now, a fair bit of information in this message. I've got to to complete my program in 5 minutes, so I'll continue reading quite ably what is left in this report. What I'm going to have to do is to bring the later one up next week, and of course I will recap so that it's fresh in your mind. Now, I'm picking out a paragraph here, or part of the paragraph, that reads that they're talking about the pyramids of Teotihuacan, which means the city of gods, which was constructed by a Mesoamerican civilization just north of Mexico City that preceded the Mayans. And apparently these are also aligned to the Pleiades, as are the Egyptian pyramids at Giza. And that is not all. On December the 21st, 2012, at around 11:11 Universal Time, there will be a precise alignment of our Sun with the galactic center, which the Mayans called Hunanto. This report reads, and this is the final paragraph here, exactly what will happen on December the 21st, 2012 still remains a mystery. But it seems that we are receiving stronger and stronger clues. The Mayans certainly placed great significance to this date. It is still 7 years away, but our world is already experiencing unprecedented, extreme and rapid changes. The number and magnitude of natural catastrophes appear to be increasing exponentially. Scientists have detected extreme and erratic behavior in our Sun that in turn is having strong effects on our Earth's atmosphere and measurable effects on the other planets in our solar system as well. Could the strange rumblings detected by Dr. Scott Hyman at the center of our galaxy be a cause of the weather and other changes we are experiencing here on Earth today? Will these energetic bursts from Hunanto increase in number and intensity as we approach the year 2012? The Mayans would answer yes. On December 12, 2012, the Mayans said that mankind will enter and begin a new era of heightened consciousness, perhaps a colossal emission of a yet unknown form of energy will burst out of the galactic center on December 21st, 2012, that will change the very physics of our world, a new physics that will last until the next cycle. Well, that's all I'm going to read from that one. But I'm coming up to the close of my program, and there isn't time to start another one. So therefore, I can comment on that that report. I'd love to know where it came from originally. I think when you read up the knowledge, the expert knowledge, so impossible to associate with people that far back, the knowledge they had of astronomy and other matters, I think there is no doubt that they were helped by extraterrestrials who visited the Mayans. They were certainly given the knowledge by someone who obviously wasn't a mere mortal human being. And I also think that the disappearance of the Mayans, which has always seemed a mystery in itself, may be explained by the fact that perhaps they were all lifted off. There's sort of mixed feelings about the level of evolution they had reached, and maybe in some ways some of their customs would have seemed very lacking in spiritual principle. But forgetting that for the moment, their level of knowledge showed that they were extremely intelligent people, able to absorb it and use it. And we have to thank the Mayan wheel, for example, that survived all those years and gave us a lot of the information that we know about their ability and understanding of astronomy. It's wonderful that it survived, but then I always have thought that if things like that are meant to survive, then of course they won't be found by just anybody and they will be protected. And I just throw in for good measure, I also think that applies to the hall of records underneath the Sphinx. It allegedly has one of the three copies of the records which were deposited there with the demise of Atlantis. And it's also said to be, and this was, I think, mainly coming through the readings of Edgar Cayce, to contain a small flying saucer. So that's all very intriguing and all very interesting. I think I have to say my farewell to you. It's coming up to time. I would like to thank you all for being with me. I must apologise for my slightly, perhaps, different voice. I do have a slightly stuffy nose, so it does affect my pronunciation. Anyway, thank you all. May God be with you.